I want my country back, and the country I'm talking about would not tolerate this nonsense.
But now you have a choice. There is a party that will represent you and stand up for common sense.
And when the dam bursts, it will do so spectacularly.
I overturned the biggest ever Conservative majority of 25,500 people.
Well, if Britain is broken, then logically, Britain needs reform.
Hello, and a warm welcome to the seventh episode of the Reform Party podcast. Today I've got somebody by the name of Kath Evans. This is the first time that I've actually had the leader of a political party in the studio, but we'll come to more of that as we go along. And the sorts of things we're going to talk about today, we're going to talk about COVID and lockdowns. We're going to talk about Ukraine and President Trump, because that's been very much in the news this week. So anyway, without more ado, could I introduce my guest, Kath Evans. Welcome, Kath.
Hi, lovely to be here.
Hi. Do you want to start off maybe just by giving people a little bit about your background, personally?
Okay. So I'm Kath Evans. I'm the leader of Freedom Alliance. We're a small political party, and we've been going for roughly about 4 years, so not long after COVID hit and the lockdowns kicked in. The party was created not by myself, but by other people who wanted to put up a political resistance to all the COVID narrative that was being pushed at the time and all the restrictions on our freedoms. I came across the party, joined as a member, and sort of gradually worked my way up the ranks, although it was never intentional.
You climbed the greasy pole.
I did. I fell in the greasy hole, I think. It was never my intention to be a leader of a political party, but I'm very passionate about our freedoms and liberties, particularly with the whole COVID debacle. I joined as many different groups and organisations as I could in order to make a difference. And this was just one of them. And various things happened down the line within the party that just resulted in me becoming the leader.
Yeah, it's amazing when you look at it and see the number of grassroots organisations that came out of the COVID debacle. I mean, apart from yourselves, there are people like the Together Federation, there's the Academy of Ideas that Claire Fox runs. There's all sorts of different grassroots movements which have come from COVID. So it's quite interesting.
It is, yes. One of the biggest ones that's slightly overlooked is the Stand in the Park movement that started in Australia and moved over to Europe and in England. And well, in the UK, I think at its peak, there was about 800 groups across the country. Not all of them are still running, but a lot of them are, although smaller. And we've done an awful lot of outreach as grassroots groups. Trying to make contact with the public and just explaining there are other perspectives and other narratives and maybe other forces at work that perhaps
the mainstream media. So did the Freedom Alliance come from Stand in the Park, or was it separate?
It was completely separate. I was involved in the Stand in the Park. You find a lot of people who were involved in any kind of grassroots group will kind of migrate to a party that more closely reflects their ideology and their viewpoints.
Yep. And you want to tell people a little bit about yourself personally, what you do for a living, and
I'm a gardener.
Uh-huh.
I'm a single mother with three children.
Right.
So tell me.
I thought I had a bad time in COVID, but I was doing my own standing in the park. I was standing in the park, going down to the park down at Hareswell and meeting some friends. Mm. I was aware that although I hated the lockdowns, and you know, we'll come to that in a minute, I was aware that I was getting off with COVID lockdowns really quite lightly by comparison. So you had three children, and what, did they go to school throughout?
I did. They were at school during that time. I think my own personal circumstances were really pivotal in my own personal response, is that as a gardener, I'm self-employed.
Mm.
So I get to choose when I go to work. who I work for.
And did COVID stop you working then? Because you were outdoors, weren't you?
It did. It did, because people were terrified to have me in their property, even though I was only in their garden, you know, windows shut, doors shut and everything else. And still didn't want me there, because that's a level of fear that the government installed in people, even though I was perfectly safe.
Yeah, I mean, that nudge unit at the Cabinet Office, I've got an awful lot to be blamed for, haven't they? Yeah. But as I say, I'm aware that you know, my experience of COVID was, I was very, as a libertarian, basically, I was very annoyed that the government, I was always aware that the government could do anything they liked. They had all power. But I'd never actually thought that they would exercise it to the extent that they did, which was, you know, a big shock to me. But I was also aware that it kind of split society in two, didn't it? Because you had the laptop class who, you know, could work from home, and actually some of them quite liked COVID because they didn't have to go to work. But everybody else, all the people who were doing deliveries and working outdoors, and everybody else really suffered from it. And I'm aware also that people with families must have, because to be stuck in the house with three kids must have had its moments.
Yeah, it was. It did really have a bad psychological effect on the children. It's not even so much the not being in school. It's not being able to see their friends and socialise. You know, become very depressed and isolated. The complete kind of lack of interest in doing schoolwork at home. IT issues, you know. But very discouraging for children trying to get. I remember them emailing their teachers asking, how do we do this? And it's the technical IT computer based questions where, if you're actually in a classroom situation, you wouldn't have any of those boundaries to learning. My own children's paths have changed dramatically. Right. I had one child at uni at the time who ended up leaving because, she was paying, you know, going into student debt for education she wasn't receiving.
I feel very sorry for students at that time because, going to university should be the best moments of your life.
Yeah.
You go and you mix with people, you find your own way, you find your personality. And to have to go to university in those circumstances, some of them, I think in Liverpool, they actually were locked down in the student buildings.
Yeah, in the student accommodation, that's right, yeah. So again, completely cut off from other people, stuck in households. It's very, very bad for their mental health, very bad.
Yeah, I mean, I suspect we haven't really hit the mental health crisis that there's going to be.
Yeah.
And I don't think, you know, we really appreciate yet all the damage that was done during that two-year period.
Yeah, I think having three children and having a job that gets me out and about and seeing lots of people, I hear an awful lot of stories. So when you have children who know people who've committed suicide because of the lockdowns, because you couldn't cope, it gets you and you want to do something about it.
Absolutely. I've been down to Birkenhead Park a few times, not as often as I would have liked, but I've met the people there and they're all great people. And the other thing I would say about them is that it's a little bit strange, because you would think if it's a group like that they would all come from the same background and all have the same motivation for being there. But it's not like that at all.
In the Stand in the Park group?
Yeah, I mean, it's a complete mixture of society.
You have absolutely a mixture and across the political board. So
correct.
We do have some very interesting conversations. one of the main premises of the Stand in the Park is that it's about freedom and truth and respect for opinions. So very often people come to us because they can't talk about what's on their mind or things that they've heard, or just that their political views within their family or in their, you know, their friends in their work environment. So that's one of the reasons they come, because they can come and air all these thoughts and grievances and ideas. And
they know nobody's going to laugh at them or going to come down on them.
That's right, yeah.
And again, that was one of the personal tragedies of the COVID lockdowns, was the fact that it did split up so many good relationships. Families who, you know, brothers and sisters. I had a bit of it in my own family, but nothing like that some people have had, whereby it's caused real rifts and people who now just won't speak to each other.
Absolutely. We've had many people come to the park with those kinds of issues and with work as well. So it's not just within families, it's in work environments, particularly with the vaccine mandates.
Yeah.
Care workers in particular. Yeah. Had to make some very serious decisions about their lives, you know, their livelihood, their family, everything has been so severely affected, and they need other people to share their concerns and look for help and support. I think there was one union that stood up for people, but all the other unions, they just all followed the government narrative. Workers of England Union. So we did become a source of information and resources for people so they could make the right decision for themselves.
And at the moment, we've got this COVID inquiry going on. What do you think of that?
I just feel people have worked so hard to gain access to information and evidence and present things. And the inquiry is just shutting down. So there's so many questions that are not even allowed to be asked, or so many answers that aren't even allowed to be given. It does make you think, what's the point? But the point is it's also so highly overlooked by the mainstream media. We're told to look here, there and everywhere, but don't look at what's going on in our own country. So I do feel the media have got such an important part to play in exposing
but they were absolutely the truth, they were so complicit in it, weren't they?
Absolutely, yes. So I do feel for the people in the COVID inquiry and the people who were vaccine injured. There's so many of them out there on such a spectrum of injury, you know, from death to things that haven't perhaps impacted their life quite so much or have just been short term. And these people are still being shut down. They're still not being listened to. A good example is a lady called Alison Butler, who's vaccine injured in Wales. And she's an ordinary lady, trusted her government, did as she was told. And now she's just been completely blanked. She put together a petition to the Senate in Wales to put the debate into the Senate for increased... Well, pardon me, can I just have a sip of my tea?
Of course you can.
For proper treatment and recognition and diagnosis.
And what's the nature of her injuries?
I've not met her personally, but she can't work anymore. There is a good article in The Conservative Woman all about her that Nicola Lund wrote, so you can look that one up. But it's not about her as an individual. It's about everyone across the country. Should be able to have these conversations with their doctors. The government should be providing funds for research and really, really should be supporting these people, giving them proper diagnosis, proper treatment. And that's before we even start looking at any kind of compensation or vaccine damage. But anyway, the point was she worked really, really hard, and Freedom Alliance really helped push her petition so it could get that debate in the Senate. And then she reached the over 10,000 signatures that you need. I think she got about nearly 12,000. And they just said, oh, no, we don't need to debate that because there's a COVID inquiry. So we don't need to do that.
There's a strong suspicion that that part of the reason for setting up the COVID inquiry, and I agree with you entirely, is an absolute sham. You know, it's set up without the right terms of reference, without the right, it's not asking any of the questions that we all know need to be answered. It's a government cover-up. And you're right, it's used often, we can't talk about that because there's an inquiry going on.
Oh, the inquiry will cover it, so we don't need to do anything. But yes, so it's an awful, awful shame that people work so hard to be heard, and they're just not. But that doesn't mean to say people shouldn't speak out. We still should keep doing that.
Absolutely. I mean, I think just like I was saying earlier, that I don't think that the extent of the mental health crisis that we've sown with this has come through yet. Similarly, I'm not sure that the effects of the medical crisis have come through yet, because there must be millions of people out there who have had their immune systems compromised by having the vaccine. And, you know, a lot of that, it will take years before it all comes through and we see the real medical consequences.
I think so. But I think we're already seeing consequences with increased waiting times at in the doctors. There certainly are statistics out there to say there's a huge rise in excess deaths.
Yeah.
And that's not just in our country, but in other countries that really did push the vaccine. So there certainly is an abundance of evidence out there, but they're choosing not to look at it.
Yeah. No, it's not good. What do you feel about the, you know, we both agree that the government reaction was a complete overreaction to the actual threat caused by the COVID virus. You would agree with that, obviously.
Yeah.
What do you think about there are theories around that the government were actively working to effectively promote the virus by stopping people, for example, taking drugs which were known to be effective in controlling symptoms and so on, like, you know, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine and these sorts of drugs. What do you think about that?
I agree with you. Yeah, I do believe, and not just in our country, but in other countries as well, that those drugs were deliberately withheld from people. So lives have been lost as a result of that. We'll never know the exact numbers. But the methods that were used, such as putting people on ventilators unnecessarily, there's many interventions that were used or weren't used that have contributed towards
my brother's a surgeon, or was a surgeon, he's retired now, and we had long conversations, and this is going back to 2019 when they first started talking about putting people on ventilators, and he pointed me to a paper that had been produced in Maryland whereby they were looking at the effect of putting people with viral infections onto ventilators. Mm. And what they discovered there was that virtually everyone, as soon as you put somebody with lung problems onto a ventilator, you kill them. And, you know, and that's what happened. I mean, if my brother and I could have worked that out a year before, why did they start building Nightingale hospitals with ventilators? You know, it was just almost everything they did was so wrong.
Well, you could argue, you know, with things like the Nightingale hospitals and the PPE, that was all part of the fear factory.
Mm.
So it wasn't necessarily about them being used for the design purpose, but more about creating this fear that would then nudge people into the behaviour that they wanted them.
And what do you think was the purpose of persuading, of trying to promote the vaccines as they did? I mean, they must have known that they were untested and that they were in some way cases not really vaccines at all. You really think, I mean, I think there has to be something fairly sinister in that.
If you look at the Coronavirus Act and how quickly that was rolled out, I mean, it's literally hundreds of pages long. That wasn't dreamt up overnight. That's been on the back burner for a long time. The fact that they threw away the emergency plans, you know, for pandemics that we had. Again, these decisions weren't just made overnight and they weren't rushed. I would say they weren't rushed in the heat of the moment. These were things that were already there just to be brought in at the right time. So to say, oh, well, there were vaccines or they knew they weren't tested, they did know that because they signed the immunity agreements.
That's right. If this vaccine kills you, you can't complain.
Yeah, no, you would never do that in any other ordinary circumstances. No. So there's so much that went on, and I feel like people just aren't aware of it because the media didn't disclose all these things, and it's about informed consent at the end of the day. If you want to put untested drugs in your body, or it should be down to the individual to know these things, but people just weren't aware, and the media did a really, really good job of covering up and making people so afraid that they went out and took these things.
Yeah, I mean, the other split in society you got was between the people who followed the mainstream media and those who didn't, access the alternative media, because, I mean, if you went on to Twitter as it was then, you know, that's where you got all the good information. That's where you had contact with the people like Sunetra Gupta and Jay Bhattacharya and all the other top doctors who were giving the other side of the narrative, yeah. not the one that the three stooges used to come on at yeah. 6 o'clock and give you on the television.
Absolutely. A lot of people just don't have the IT or the time to go out and do their own research. And so people do rely on the news or their friends or what they've read in the newspaper. It's understandable. People just, in general, don't have the time to do all that. And they'd like to be able to trust these sources, which is why another reason why the stand in the parks is so important. So you can go out and talk to other people who do have the time to read. And
well, I don't get let them off so lightly as that. Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with these are the sources of information that they like to get. Mm. On the internet now, you've got all the information in the world. Yeah. There's no reason why people couldn't have been doing a bit of their own research and saying, just a minute, this bit doesn't look quite right, or this is definitely wrong in some instances. Mm. But as you say, not everybody did it.
No, people just have busy lives. They don't have the time. Lots of people aren't even up to date with what's going on in the world or the latest football results or what have you, because they're just not interested. So to have that level of interest where you actually disbelieve everything you're being told and go find something else, people just don't do it.
It was the other big shock to me was not just the fact that the government were imposing these restrictions on people's lives, but that so many people seemed to quite like it. You know, they certainly didn't object to it. Mm. You know, you went into a supermarket and everybody was wearing their mask and obeying all the sometimes completely ridiculous edicts that were coming from the government. Mm. And what it has done is given the government much more confidence than they had that they can manipulate and control the whole population.
Yeah, I think one this is my personal view is that a lot of people feel like the government never really cared about them.
Mm.
And we know they don't. But when COVID came along, the government suddenly cared about you. Not only did they care about you, but they gave you all these extra rules for you to follow and all these things that you could do and you could grass up on your neighbours. And it made you feel important and special that you were doing something for the greater good.
You could be a COVID warden.
I remember my hairdresser came round during lockdowns to do my hair and someone grassed him up and he got fined. people love having power, and the government gave people power, and that's actually hard to shake off and take people. You don't need to do that. You don't need to grass people up. You don't need to boss people around. You don't have to turn into a mini Hitler. You don't need to do any of those things. You just need to keep calm. Carry on.
Yeah, but I was saying, you know, that I found interesting with Stand in the Park. I mean, I remember I went to your Christmas party one year, and when I looked around that room, and there was probably about 40 people having dinner and so on, and when I looked around, it was just like a complete cross section of there was middle class grannies, and there was young activists and all sorts of a whole range of people. But what did they have in common that all the other people didn't? Now, why is it that these people were individual enough to go and find out their own information, to understand that what they were being fed was a pack of lies, and then to come together? I mean, there's no absolute logic to, you know, it wasn't one particular type of person that's there.
Yeah, I mean, I think people come to the Stand in the Park from different perspectives as well. Some people might have come with the COVID thing, other people might come because they're concerned about cash and digital ID.
Right.
Some people might come because they've just got a leaflet through the door and they're a bit curious, or they've read the light paper and they kind of agreed with what they've read in the light paper. So people do come from a whole different places.
But you tend to find that most of the ones I met have got quite a few of these things in common. It's not, you know, that if you're a COVID skeptic, it's quite likely that you're not very keen on digital currency and et cetera. Yeah.
I mean, there are some similarities, or I don't know, maybe some common areas that people might be slightly more, might be more people who are self-employed.
Mm.
So that's that sort of independent thinking. There's quite a few people who are quite into like allotments, growing their own. So that's kind of independent
that's
living.
That's a slightly different strand of it, isn't it?
Yeah. So there's different elements, but I think this kind of sense of independence or sovereignty is kind of a common thread that runs through everybody.
Well, certainly it was a big spurt for activism, wasn't it? And you made the most of that. I mean, I've seen you, what you do in terms of your activism, and it's absolutely astonishing. If you want to talk about grassroots political work, you know, you're the hero.
Oh, thank you. That's very kind, Ken.
No, it's true. I mean, I know the amount of work that you've put into it, and it is a lot of work. And you must have a very busy life without all of that.
It is an awful lot of work. And say it's not something I ever intended to do. I was never a political or an activist before any of this. But I was just so concerned about the state of the country, where it was going, and the loss of our freedoms. I just couldn't wait for someone else to do it and take charge. It was just like, if I don't do it, no one's going to. So I did.
Yep. Right. Do you want to talk me through some of the Freedom Alliance Party's policies?
So Freedom Alliance, just a bit of background. As I said before, we started out at the beginning of the pandemic as a direct response to the COVID narrative and as a part of the freedom movement's arm of resistance is the best way to put it. So I think compared to how other political parties maybe start out life, we've come from a different angle. So that kind of makes us unique. I say unique, but because there are other parties, who became quite prominent and quite active. Alliance for Democracy and Freedom, Heritage Party. Well, that's just a few, but there are other parties who I'd say are kind of more freedom orientated, shall we say. So our policies have stemmed from this sense of wanting to protect our freedoms and claw them back. And that's kind of moved from the whole COVID thing into other aspects, such as net zero, you know, freedom of movement. We cover migration, farming, housing. So we're kind of spreading spreading our range into other aspects of kind of general policy, if you like.
Yes.
But everything we've got that comes from that place of protecting our freedoms and civil liberties from tyranny, from the globalists, from technocracy, and all that kind of corporate control and government overreach into our lives. So it's a big pushback against that and trying to find a way that we want to live without all those things.
Yeah. And the globalist bit you just mentioned just now, that is now a big fault line in politics, isn't it?
I do feel like with the mainstream parties...
Sorry, can I ask, is Reform mainstream?
Say that again.
Is Reform UK mainstream? Would you class us as mainstream?
Well, Reform are fairly young, a bit like ourselves. They started out as the Brexit Party in 2018, I think. Brexit happened, so they rebranded, basically. But this is my view. You might have a different perspective. They rebranded using that supporter base, and I think they had quite a lot of influx from the Conservative Party, that people joining them. And there seems to be quite an alignment there. I don't know if that's just my view. You might say differently.
No, I wouldn't say. I agree.
Yeah. So there certainly are differences between ourselves and Reform, and there are similarities. And I think if you looked in every party's manifesto, there probably is something where there will be policies where, oh yeah, that's us, not too bad, that one. But when you look at the whole, you think, no, they're definitely going in the wrong direction, or they're definitely all the same in some respects. Regardless, the nuanced difference between the policies is kind of irrelevant when they come across as puppets, and the puppeteers are the globalists, the mega corporations. You think, well, they do, you know, it's different ways to the same end.
Yeah, I mean, but I went through just to check your answers. I went through your policies before I came out, just to check, and I read through them, and I have to say, there was nothing in there that I could disagree with. I agreed with absolutely everything. I mean, as you say, there maybe is a little bit of a different emphasis in some of them than we would have, but really, there's nothing controversial in any of the policies But the globalist bit was interesting because I think there's now a split developing between globalist politicians and nationalist politicians, and that is it's now starting to, you can see a fault line between the two.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how all that pans out.
Yeah, it's like you say, there's always going to be alliances formed. There's always going to be like the whole left and right. There's always going to be differences in ideologies. But so when it comes down to tactics to achieve an end result in a cause, that we are in many ways very similar. As I say, we are with a sort of broader freedom-orientated parties.
Well, my view is that this left-right paradigm is no longer viable. It's no longer relevant.
Now, we have people joining our party who've come across the political spectrum. Mm. So I see that dissolving, but a lot of people still think that's
the fault line is between people who like the World Economic Forum and people who don't. People who like being run by the United Nations and the World Health Organization and those that don't. That's the fault line, I think, that is now running through politics.
Mm.
And it's quite what's been happening in the last couple of weeks with regard to, since Trump has got in, he, I think, has made it even more manifest. What's your view on him?
Personally, I don't like him. I think sometimes he's right, but you don't always have to like people and know that they're right. I do see there's with Starmer and Trump, there's certainly a widening gap, but between America and the UK, there seems to be a more of a coming together in social media and culturally. We are binding a lot closer, even though our two leaders seem to be pushing apart. So how that's going to pan out, I don't know.
Well, you've got to remember that you don't. If you've got a doctor who cures you of something, you don't really have to like them very much. You know, liking them as a personality is unimportant.
Yeah.
And similarly with a politician, if the politician has got the right medicine for the country and the right, then you know whether you personally like him or not is really irrelevant. And I think, in my view, since he's got in, some of the things he's done have been fantastic.
Yeah.
If you look at the Doge,
I think that's great, absolutely brilliant. That's a good example of things that you might do well and things that you know.
And
might not.
He's appointed Bhattacharya as head of the medicines agency,
and
you know that's going to be huge. Yeah. I think as time goes, you know, some of the things we're talking
Kennedy
about,
as well. Absolutely. And Robert Kennedy, so really, really happy about those.
Yeah, I mean the appointments he's made this time have been fantastic. I think, and you know, the likes of that. I mean, I wouldn't like to be in Anthony Fauci's shoes just now, would you?
He did have Biden protect him, remember?
He doesn't have any more.
So it'd be interesting to see how that pans out. But things that concern me are kind of, we had the CAN bill, the Climate and Nature bill, that was, I think it was the day after the Trump inauguration.
All eyes were on
Trump and what's going on over there, and people were going over there, and Farage was flying over there, and everyone was like, "Oh, look at America." And I'm sitting at home going, "Please look at what's going on here, please." So we think, we do need to be really careful that we don't get too carried away with what's going on over the pond,
right?
And focus on issues.
There was another bill we tried to sneak through at that time. Was it the something in nature bill, which
the climate and nature bill? That's right.
If that had gone through, I mean, people don't. I never really read up on it very well, but I was aware that if that had gone through, could have been absolutely catastrophic.
Yeah, it could have been. Yeah, and it got kicked down the road till July, I think, and
Chris Littlewood, who we were talking about, he was very involved
vocal
in that. Yeah,
as were we. But you hear a lot about reform being against net zero, and we're going to do this and we're going to do that when we get in against net zero. But what about now? Where were they with the climate and nature bill? We never heard anything from the leadership. It was great, and I'm so pleased that Chris Littlewood did speak out, and a lot of reform members were against it as well. But it was disappointing not to hear the leadership speak about it.
I'm not going to defend the party leadership in everything they do, and I don't think anybody would want to do that. But you're right that in terms of the grassroots membership, I mean, we have members in common as well, don't we?
Oh, absolutely.
And,
yes.
You know, the grassroots level. That's the sort of thing that is so important. And, you're right that we need to keep our eye on these things.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we would like to have closer working relationships with Reform. I know you and I have a good relationship, and I do with other people in Reform, other candidates and whatnot, and we've worked together on campaigns locally. And
yeah, we should probably tell people what we've done. What have we done,
Kath? Oh, you can tell them if you like.
Kath and I, when we first met up, we got involved in running the anti-20 mile an hour campaign in Wirral. So Kath and I spent many weeks standing in the middle of roundabouts with big yellow boards, listening to people tooting their horns. And actually, it was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
It was great fun. It was freezing cold with blue fingers. and we did it for months. And we'd pick different roundabouts where we'd get a lot of cars coming by, and in the areas where these 20 mile an hour roads were being rolled out. And the support from the public was phenomenal.
Absolutely.
It wasn't just that. Don't forget, we also did a massive leafleting campaign as well, and that was encouraging people to write to, I think it was Harper at the time, who was the Transport Secretary, to write to their local councillor to get involved, to sign, because there was a petition going around as well, and we had the roadside campaign too. So there was an awful lot of things that we were encouraging people to do.
A lot of it's only latterly that I realised that so much of the impetus for the 20 mile an hour thing comes out of net zero.
Absolutely.
Actually, a lot of the things that when you see the symptoms and once you analyse it a bit more closely, a lot of the things go back to net zero as being the culprit.
They do. There's a lot of things that are interconnected that people don't see. I don't like to use the term awake.
Ah, I was going to come
really
on to that.
I don't like that term.
Explain what it is, because I've got a few questions I want to ask you about.
Oh, right,
it.
Okay.
Are you awake to start with?
I think it'd be big-headed to say that I was, because I don't think we can ever be aware of everything and understand the root causes and the connections, because there's so much that's so interconnected and is historical as well. We can never really know all of these things and never really know the truth about anything.
No.
But when we can say that we're awake, we can say we are aware that perhaps we're being lied to, we're being manipulated.
So is awake being aware of something that you want to question, rather than being having a whole gamut of ideology that you believe in? Is that right?
Yeah. Well, even the whole definition of awake, people will have different an understanding of what that means. It's a bit like the whole red pill, blue pill thing. Mm. You know, people live in a bubble and they're just not aware of what else is going on and who's controlling what. And when people are awake, they are aware of what's outside the bubble.
I've had people, I think, from your group come up to me in the pub and say, "I'm awake, by the way." And I haven't got enough time to really probe into what you're telling me.
Mm. People who are considered or can consider themselves to be conspiracy theorists might be considered to be awake. Mm-hmm. I don't always think that that's true. You can be awake to a very small area of things that are going on, but not, you know, this area over here, not that area over there. So I don't think it's fair to say people are awake or they're asleep. It's not black and white like that.
No. And some people might be awake in one issue, but not awake in others.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
I agree. It's not a helpful term at all. But you mentioned conspiracy theories, and this is one area I think whereby there probably is a bit of a difference between. I'm not saying Freedom Alliance promotes conspiracy theories, but certainly a lot of the people I've met, your activists and supporters and so on, as you rightly say, they do tend to have this conspiratorial bent. Now, I'm not criticizing that, because after what happened with COVID, a lot of people began to not only doubt what the government was telling them about COVID, but then to think, well, what else should I be doubting that the government have told me? And then they think, well, I think almost everything needs to be questioned. Is that a fair summation?
I think that's a fair summary. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favourite podcasts was one called London Calling, which had Toby Young, who's now the director of the Free Speech Union. And he did it along with a guy called James Dellingpole, who was one of the original climate skeptics. He came from a journalistic background, but anyway, these two were obviously old friends, and the podcast worked terribly well because it was just two friends having a chat each week, and they talked about different things. They had a culture corner where they you know talked about things in the media and so on. And what was interesting was it lasted all through the COVID period. And what was interesting was that at the end, James Dellingpole went down virtually every rabbit hole that you could find, and he doubted absolutely everything and became conspiratorial to the point whereby they almost couldn't have a conversation anymore, because Toby was wanting to talk about things that were going on in the day, politics and so on. And Toby and Dellingpole would just say, "Oh, that's not important. You know, that's just you reading the mainstream." And so they got to the point whereby eventually, as I predicted about 3 or 4 weeks before it, this can't go on. And the other thing that was interesting about it was that listening to Dellingpole, it was very much as if you're watching somebody have a mental breakdown in slow motion. It really, you know, it began to become, his theories and conspiracies became more and more bizarre. So that was a lesson for me, I think.
I think it's important to always have the channel of communication open. Whatever people want to say or ideas they want to air, but we should be allowed to do that. You know, we should be able to speak our minds. It's how you handle them. You've got to be respectful. You've got to listen. You don't have to agree. I've heard some Dellingpole things, but you know, you just
do you follow him? Do you?
I've heard a few things. One was about dinosaurs don't exist or something like that, and it. Don't mean to be disrespectful.
Well, I wrote down a few to test you on, so I will do that in a minute.
Listen to him as a source of information.
No.
It's a source of entertainment.
Yes.
You need to make the distinction between the two. You've got to take it with a pinch of salt.
I felt so sorry for poor Toby Young, though, because, as I say, his friend was just disintegrating in front of his eyes.
Yeah.
And, not good.
No.
And it's one thing that if we're political parties, and at the end of the day, the object of a political party is to get power, isn't it?
That's generally what happens.
Otherwise, what's the point?
The Freedom Alliance, we have a kind of a different approach. We're not about getting power. Oh. As I said earlier, I'm not interested in being a prime minister.
You know, but you've stood for election.
I've stood for election. I've stood for local election. I've stood for general election. But I'm not a career politician. And I think I could safely say that the vast majority of our candidates aren't career politicians either. They're standing on causes that matter to them. Particularly locally, when people are standing in their local elections, it's because there's 20 mile an hour zones going on and they don't want them. Or it's because they don't like the woke ideology in school, because there isn't enough social care.
Yeah.
You know, these are the reasons that people are standing, things that matter to them in their local communities or in their wards. And they want to have a voice, and they want to give those who are underrepresented a voice. They want to create that change. It's not about pushing the brand of the party.
Do you not think if you're not at the end of the day, I mean, you stood for election, that the obvious corollary of standing for election is that you're trying to be elected.
Yeah.
If you try to be elected, then that's to take, you know, have some power, isn't it? That's the point of it.
I think it's authority is the word you're looking for, not power, because I don't want to control anybody.
No, I'm not suggesting you do, but I mean, we found out with the 20 mile an hour thing, you know, we spent 6 months of our lives standing on roundabouts and winning all the arguments everywhere.
Yeah.
Every argument was won. And
you know, I think we won the hearts of the public.
We did.
Yeah.
Well, and when you looked at the council did their polls on whether people wanted it or not, and in both of them, more than 90% said no, we don't want it. No, we're not really. But in both cases, all the rollouts, the thing just went through.
I think it does shine a light on how powerful the entities are that are controlling our councils, and how democracy goes completely out the window when they see the pound signs, or when they see that they want their, they want to preserve their seat, and they think that the only way they can do it is vote for in the manner that's going to keep their seat. Becoming a councillor or a politician stops being about what you originally wanted it to be. It's about maintaining what you've achieved, you know, that position that they've achieved. I think you could say the same about the other mainstream political parties. Then, are they out for an ideological cause, or are they out to for themselves? Are they out to support the people? Are they out to support the big corporations and the industries and the markets? So as a candidate, I stand for the people. I'm not standing because I want Freedom Alliance to succeed. It's because I want those causes or those issues resolved.
But if you're going to have those causes and issues resolved in your favour, ultimately, the only way you can do it is through political power, isn't it? By winning at the ballot box. Now, I may be a little smug at the moment because I think we are 5 points ahead of the next nearest party in the last poll. So, you know, we're obviously doing very well in terms of the politics of it. But you're right. Ultimately, we don't want power. I never wanted power. I didn't even want to be an MP, although I stood. But we don't want power for its own sake. We want power to be able to sort the problems that we've got.
Yeah, I think that is a difference between us and Reform, in that the way Farage or Reform, Tice at the time, managed the whole COVID thing. You know, they were, well, it was Tice in particular was in favour of the mandates, and, you know, Farage was
saying, one interview said that,
Yeah, but, you know, they didn't talk about, they said that in one interview, but you don't know what goes on behind closed doors.
No.
And they've said very little since. You don't hear them putting the neck on the line like Andrew Bridgen did, speaking out.
Do you trust Andrew Bridgen?
I've met him a couple of times. I feel like I was very, very proud of him when he stood up and spoke as he did in Parliament when nobody else did. I think it's an awful shame he's no longer an MP. The circumstances around that are very dubious. I think his heart's in the right place.
I follow politics quite closely, and I watched Bridgen for the last few years because he was quite a prominent right of centre Tory MP, and he never showed any, in my view, any freedom loving instincts at all, and his conversion to being anti-vaccine and so on was almost overnight. Suddenly, you know, from being he suddenly, it was just like he was on the road to Damascus, and it was. And I, for that reason, and I'd heard some other things about him in terms of his personal life and so on that I didn't like the sound of. And I wondered whether this whole conversion to being anti-lockdown, etc., was for his own purposes rather than for anything else.
Yeah. But he's not the leader of a political party. Nigel Farage is. And that's, as you've said, you know, they are one of the most up-and-coming parties. And he will not touch talking about what happened with the COVID and the whole narrative.
Well, I'm not sure that's quite true.
He's not really pushing for...
Well, I think you get to a point with COVID, and I must say I've kind of got to that point as well, although we've talked about it a lot today, whereby you just want to forget it. Not so much forget it, but you want to move on and to do more, do things that are positive rather than negative. And if that means giving COVID a bit of a backseat, then that's probably the right thing to do. And I think that's where I am with it now.
Yeah, but you were there up at the front with in the panic. You were part of that resistance, and Reform, in my view, I might be wrong, weren't really part of that resistance, because if they were, Freedom Alliance never would have needed to have been born. So, I mean, and that's why we have members that are with one foot in our camp and one foot in yours, because they respect the fact that we will speak out on things that are unpopular, knowing they will make us unpopular.
But if we're going to get elected, we have to be very careful not to say things that are terribly unpopular, which is why when you come to the things like being awake and the conspiracy theories, we have to be very careful, because it's very easy to smear us as nutters.
It is very, it's very easy for anyone to be smeared. You just don't have to, doesn't have to be conspiracy theories. It could just be, you know, your illegitimate child, or who bought your underwear?
Yeah.
Or Lord Ali being your best mate? Or you know, if people want to smear you, they will. Like, there's the whole plethora of names and things that they'll dig up and throw at you if they want to smear you. Mm. So please don't. Conspiracy theories is just another one of those terms that they will use to smear people with. So,
I mean, it's only a conspiracy theory until it's proven to be true.
Well, exactly. Yeah, yeah. and we should. And people call it a conspiracy theory. It's ideas. It's debate. Yeah. It's
the COVID coming from the Wuhan lab was a big conspiracy theory, which then transpired to be almost certainly correct.
Yeah.
But I think it's not even that. I think we cannot be seen to be holding theories that are out with the mainstream, because if we do, then we can lose support. I mean, the obvious one that's been going on at the moment is over Ukraine, where Farage has been. I've had people write in and saying, "I'm resigning my membership." You know what Farage has said. You know about Zelensky's outrageous and so. I don't think he's actually said very much recently, but there was a well-known interview that he did with Nick Robinson during the election, where he put forward his views on Ukraine. And in fairness to him, these views have been absolutely the same going right back to 2014, whereby he stood up in the European Parliament and gave a long speech explaining why it was that we shouldn't expand NATO and the European Union east. And if we did, there would be a war in Ukraine. And he predicted that in 2014, and he was right. So, yeah, I find it irritating when leaders make mistakes. I don't think Farage has made a mistake on this, because a couple of years ago, people were writing to me saying Richard Tice has gone on an aid mission with a lorry taking supplies to Ukraine. I'm never vote reform again.
Yeah, I heard that. Yeah, did he actually go? Was that real?
He did go. Yeah. So you know that. So you got some people, and I actually think in terms of Ukraine that the public is split right down the middle. That I mean, maybe slightly more on the mainstream media side, but again, it's a bit like COVID. It's who you listen to will make you form your opinion on it.
Yeah, I think things like with Ukraine, the war is so complex. There's so many things going on behind the scenes that we're just not really aware of, and we will jump to conclusions and think, you know, come up with our conspiracy theories. As to what's going on, why it's happening.
You can look up Wikipedia and find the history. It's not, you know, it's
not
hard.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Our policy on war, any war, is don't get involved in foreign wars. That's it. So it's not Ukraine or Gaza or Yemen or anywhere. Let's not get involved in foreign wars. Let's not spend our taxpayers' money on other people's battles.
It's an excellent starting point.
So that's what it's so. You think there's so much money leaving this country, taxpayers' money going to foreign aid, going to foreign wars, all sorts of things. We really need to be pulling back on all of those things.
I mean, what's happened in the last week in terms of the Ukrainian thing has been quite amazing. I mean, it started. Did you see Starmer and Trump? Starmer went to America and they did a press conference with him. Did you see it?
I did. It was, yeah. Well, Starmer's always very wooden, isn't he? he's always very nervous. He's either nervous or completely deadpan.
But the next day, the mainstream media spun it as being a great success. You know, he'd gone there and he'd faced Trump down and so on. That wasn't how I saw the thing at all.
No.
Trump was nice to him. But if you actually listen to what Trump was saying, he was trolling him the whole way through.
Yeah.
And he started off by touching his lapel, saying, "Oh, it's a nice suit."
Oh, yeah.
I heard that. Lord Ali. Yeah. And then saying, "What a lovely accent you've got. I would have been president 20 years ago if I had got your accent." He was referring to the voice coach. Almost everything, he was being trolled all the way through. I didn't even realise it.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw a section of the press conference with Zelensky and Vance and Trump. That was a bit eye-opening. I just thought, is this being set up? Is this all for show? Like Trump said, you know, this will make great TV. He's a showman, isn't he? Through and through.
Yeah.
That kind of behaviour should never really be seen on camera. But it makes you think that's probably what goes on behind closed doors most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, he did it quite... I mean, what you've got to... Trump is very, very smart. People don't realise just quite how smart he is. Mm. And you've always... People say, he said this or he's... Never listen to anything he says and never take anything he says literally, because he's always got an angle.
Mm.
And that was the same there. But I mean, in my view, he humiliated Starmer in that press conference. But then, following on when they had the fallout with Zelensky, Trump's actually won because Starmer came back and said, "Oh well, if Trump's not going to support Ukraine, we will. We'll form the coalition of
The willing." Well, before coalition prior
the,
to that, they
coalition
really
of the
said,
stupid of the tried.
They don't really said they're going to sign this 100-year deal to give them like £3 million.
We're
going to
put boots on the ground and planes in the sky. We haven't got any boots to put on the ground. We've got 70,000 of an army. You know, it's just crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. I saw the little clip of him saying, I think it was in Parliament, saying, it's going to be good for the economy, for our economy, to have all these munitions building all these missiles in Belfast, and it's going to be great for the young apprentices. Really? You think, well, right, okay, so suddenly it's great to build all these bombs and everything else. What happened to the green agenda? That's out the window now.
But then, I mean, Starmer having said, "Oh, we're going to sort it out. We're going to put troops on the ground and so on." Then Zelensky changed his mind. Said, "No, I'm very sorry, President Trump. I didn't mean to come out that way. Will you try and get peace?" Mm. So, I mean, Starmer's just to me, it's just been.
Well, I think Zelensky knows he's a puppet. He's not a control in Ukraine. Mm. This is between Putin and Trump.
So let them sort it out.
Yeah, it's not even. We're not really part of this. All I see is that Starmer is trying to get a little slice of that pie of the return.
All geopolitics, and when you study the history of it, it's the same on both sides.
Yeah.
So you had basically the CIA going in, having color revolutions in Ukraine to overturn the regimes there, and you had Putin doing the same thing, supporting the Republic of Donetsk, and so both of them were just had their fingers in all the time, manipulating stuff. Yeah. So it was just geopolitics, and you're quite right. We should stay absolutely out of it.
Yeah.
And the main reason that I'm much more on the Trump side is that at the end of the day, there are hundreds of thousands of people have died in that war. Mm. And if you say that the Zelensky, Starmer, we can't win it. We know that we can't win it. But if you say we're going to keep it going, to what effect? You know it's not going to be won. Mm. So all you're going to do is have more people killed.
Yeah. And I think also from we've got the local elections coming up. To be talking about your position on Ukraine is just going to be divisive. You need to not talk about that at all and just focus on things that matter to people in their own counties. Is it farms being put all over the farmland? Is it 20-mile-an-hour zones, is it? Just focus on things you can actually change in the area.
We didn't change the 20-mile-an-hour zone.
No, we didn't. No. That was after the election, though. And this is the thing. The people who stood for our local council, Wirral Council, did not stand on that issue. They did not use the 20-mile-an-hour zone. All the net zero and everything that they knew they were going to be bringing in over the next 4 years. None of it appeared in any of their voting paraphernalia. Didn't mind, because I said, I will stand against all these things, but people just didn't know, like, is it really going to happen? Is she just a conspiracy theorist? And, oh, wow, hello, here we are.
Well,
they were lied to by those councillors, because they knew, and they changed the system so that they don't get voted every year. It's every 4 years now. So it's 4 years to go before we can get those people out.
Yep.
But that's 4 years to wake people up.
May 2017. Yeah. So really only just over 2 years.
Well, I meant from that point
from
in
that
time.
Point, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, we've got big plans for the council. We had 40 people in the public gallery at the budget meeting Monday night.
Yeah.
40 people, which is, was the most boring meet because you couldn't even ask a question. Yeah. So you had to listen to them say, this department's going to get this much and this department's going to get that much. And this is money, this is the 40 million that they've just borrowed from central government, which my granddaughter will still be paying off in terms of the loan. Mm. But we in Reform, we've got big plans. We've now got, I think, 25 people confirmed who will allocate them award to stand in for
great.
We've got a website which is just starting to develop, whereby we're detailing all the errors that have been made in the past by councillors, and you know, and naming specific councillors and naming the ones that we're going to try and make sure we definitely get out.
Like Liz Gray.
Liz Gray's one on the list, yeah.
She's mine.
Well, if you join the forum, I'll let you stand against her. How's that?
If you won't let me do anything, I'll do what I like. on that note, it's really important that we work together about who we're going to place, not just on the Wirral where Ken and I both live, but across the country where there are local elections. It's really important that we don't split that vote.
No.
And if we can work together with people on the ground to make sure that doesn't happen, it's so important we get the mainstream parties out and people who are going to think outside the box and be bold and brave and stand up and for what's actually going on and for the people in the areas.
I'm not sure where are you people in going to stand in the Lancashire elections that are coming up in
we've got people who are interested in standing in 23. It's 23, I think, county council.
No, well, there's county council elections are coming up this year in a couple of months time.
Yeah, in May.
In Lancashire.
Yes. We are having conversations with people now.
Right.
That's why it's not just Reform, it's the other parties as well. We have an agreement with some of the other smaller parties that we will not stand against each other. And that is why we have these conversations beforehand, because it's too late once you get to 5 weeks beforehand and you hand in your paperwork in. You need to have those conversations in advance.
Well, I had Simon Evans in here a few weeks back, who's the big guy in Lancashire. So if you want to have any conversations like that, I'll put you in touch with him and make sure that we... Okay. I mean, I'm not saying he would be amenable to it, because I suspect he'll say we're going to stand everywhere. But it's worth having the chat anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right. So I was going to test you on your how awake you are.
Oh, God. Right.
So I've got a few conspiracy theories, and I want to run them past you. Now, you don't have to. I have to tell me, you know, if you don't want to, okay, whether you. Well, tell me something before I start. Tell me some of the ones that you do believe in.
I don't think I'm a conspiracy theorist. Ah. However, I've done something like this before. It was really funny.
I think it was the University of Oxford
or something. They did a test on, you know, are you a conspiracy theorist?
Yeah.
I thought, just for fun, I'll fill this out. And according to them, I am. Mm. But I wouldn't have said I was. So.
Well, I'll tell you after. Okay. I'll tell you after this. Did the moon landings actually happen?
Me personally, I think that they did.
They did. Yep. Oh well, okay. that's a tick. Was the 9/11 was that a false flag event?
No. 9/11 was, in my view, was a genuine event. It was genuinely done.
So it wasn't by terrorists. wasn't done by government.
I don't think it was an inside job, no.
So all these buildings fell down on their own?
No, I think airplanes crashed into them.
No, the ones that the airplanes didn't crash into and still collapsed.
Well, I'm just saying I don't think it was an inside job.
No, that's fine. No, you got another tick.
Okay.
Are chemtrails altering our weather?
Chemtrails, that's a good one. I'm glad you brought that up. I believe in geoengineering. That's
you
real.
You do, right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, it's... Do I think every aeroplane, the exhaust of every aeroplane, has been deliberately designed to poison us? No. But I do think there are aeroplanes out there that do spray chemicals that do alter the weather.
Right.
So I don't know what you call that, 50-50?
No, I think that's a cross.
Am I genuine?
You're definitely. Genuine? No, I mean, it's a funny one. I have a guy who sends me a picture of the clouds every morning and says, look, that's not natural. And I have to say that the skies don't look the same as they did 10, 15, 20 years
ago. Ken, I'm a gardener. I spend like 8 hours of every single day outside, and I look at the sky quite a lot. Mm. So I would definitely say, particularly in the last year, what's been going on with the clouds and the skies is not normal.
But is it an evil plot by the Illuminati to change the weather in order to kill us all? Or is it just something that, as you say, they've changed something in the aviation fuel? Or is it, you know...
There might be changes in aviation fuel because of net zero reasons. I don't think that's what's causing the...
Do you think it's linked to climate change then?
I think it's linked to deliberate attempts to alter the climate. Mm. That's what I believe.
Right.
Yeah.
Did Paul McCartney die aged 19?
No.
You not know this one?
I don't know that one, no, but I did once babysit for the woman who made his wife's wedding dress, so he is real.
No, the theory, there's conspiracies that Paul McCartney died in a car crash in 1966, but by that time the Beatles were just taking off, so they replaced him with somebody else that looked like him, and there's all sorts of, you know, they go through all the Beatles records, you know, and they find references that are supposed to be in the lyrics to the fact that it's not the real Paul McCartney.
Okay, no, I've not come across that one.
Okay. Do you know anything about the Las Vegas massacre? No. You're not much of it, yeah.
I'm really rubbish. I'm sorry.
is the earth flat?
No.
That's right.
Okay. It's more of like an oval sphere, ovally shaped sphere.
But it's definitely not flat.
It's definitely not flat. But the moon's real as well.
I have a friend who emails me virtually every week with the latest thing about it's all to do with the horizons and you know, proving that the earth is flat and that the Antarctic is the end of the world. You know,
I think people believe these things because they've become so disillusioned with their governments that they I don't know, it's difficult. They will disbelieve on principle everything that they've been told.
Yeah, I mean, it's natural, isn't it?
I can understand people doing that. I really, really can. I genuinely sympathise with people who are so disenfranchised with the system.
But the problem is when you're presented with all these potential conspiracies, it's impossible to sort the truth from the fiction.
Why do we need to? I've got my own business. I've got my family, I run a political party, I really haven't got time to worry. I haven't got television, I haven't got time to watch the television. I'm too busy trying to affect change on things I can change. Yeah. I don't need to...
I think you're one of the worst conspiracy theorists I've ever come across. You're absolutely useless. But I've got one last one for you that I suspect you might not be so easy with.
Go on.
5G masts.
Oh, 5G masts. Go on.
Well, I mean, is the radiation from 5G masts harmful to people? That's one theory. Or is it linked to the vaccine when the vaccine implanted lots of chips that the 5G masts then set off? There's all sorts of different ones.
Years ago, everyone said smoking was fine. What are you worrying about? Smoking's not going to harm your health. It'll be fine. It was proven that smoking harmed your health, but smoking was never banned. It was still pushed. Doctors would still literally say, smoke, you've got stress, or have a cigarette. It took years and years and years for it to come through that smoking is actually bad for your health. And I think exactly the same thing will happen with 5G masks, with radiation. It's not just in the masks. It's coming from other devices, your mobile phone, your laptop. All these things are impacting people's health genuinely.
And have you got any evidence for that?
I am going to sound conspiracy theorist now.
I mean, Paul Cardin pushes this a lot, doesn't he? The 5G thing, and
I think when you have companies, you could even say like Grenfell Tower with the cladding, and they want to sell a product, and there's guidelines, there's boundaries on how much radiation can be allowed to come off something before it's considered harmful.
Yeah.
And then they change those boundaries to make them wider so that more radiation is acceptable. You've got to question why they're doing that.
Well, because they need the extra bandwidth, presumably. You know, you know, 5G is better than 4G.
So they say. But radiation levels generally will affect a human's body. Our homes are full of so many things now that emit radiation. Mm. It's not just 5G. There's so many things in our homes, so many more devices. And all these things collectively.
Well, I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying I've looked at it. I can't find the evidence for it that radiation at the kind of levels that you're talking about can have any effect on human health. But I haven't studied it in great detail. This is it. You don't have time to study all these things.
We don't have time, and that's why we have to kind of trust other people to do the work or do the research. But when you see that business, all these technologies, it's such a massive, massive lucrative business. They're not going to look for research, and they're not going to do the research. Any research that is done is going to be bought and paid for to put out the results that says, oh, it's all fine and dandy.
Yeah, well, that's a bit of a conspiracy theory.
So it is a bit of a conspiracy theory. You could say the same with climate change or the vaccines.
It's coming back to the vaccines, because that's certain that that's what happened with the vaccines, isn't it?
Absolutely. There'll always be scientists. There'll always be research that says everything's fine and dandy, and there'll always be some.
And the other one, of course, is climate change.
It isn't. Or climate change, any of these things. And all of these voices should be heard. But the fact that they're literally... isn't any at all. It is in itself kind of a little bit worrying. Why isn't that? Isn't that a little bit odd?
It is. It is awful. And you know, COVID. What happened with COVID? It's as you say, it did waken up an awful lot of people. And what it means is that people really started, as you say, to question everything. And some uncomfortable things that people have started to question as well. Because, you know, for example, you know, the whole narrative that you've had about the previous world wars, was it all true? I don't know.
I don't know, but it's so important that people feel free to question these things and should be able to find out the information and it be given to them and it be genuine, so that they can make their own minds up. I think that's what it's all about, is having that information for informed consent and being able to make those choices for yourself if you want that in your life.
Yeah. Okay, two very quick ones at the end. Are the Clintons serial killers? No, I'll let you off on that.
All I can say is an awful lot of people get away with murder, don't they?
An awful lot of people who got to know who are now dead. Yeah.
Yeah. So who knows? Who knows? But I think the closer you get to the truth, the more in anything or revealing any kind of discrepancies, you're putting yourself in danger, aren't you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Right. Well, I don't think I've got anything else. Anything you want to talk about finally? Any messages for the public from the Freedom Alliance Party?
Yeah. If you like the sound of us, or if you've not even really heard of us before, go and have a look at our manifesto and get in touch, because we just want ordinary people to feel that they can have their say. And politics isn't for people who came from Eton or are wealthy. It's for everyday people like me, like Ken, who just want to do their bit. So get in touch with us.
You can edit that bit out, will you, Stephen? only joking. Kath, that's been fantastic. Right. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. I hope you have too.
And,
good luck.
Brilliant. Thank you. Okay.
I want my country back, and the country I'm talking about would not tolerate this nonsense. But now you have a choice. There is a party that will represent you and stand up for common sense.
And when the dam bursts, it will do so spectacularly.
I overturned the biggest ever Conservative majority of 25,500 people.
But if Britain is broken, then logically, Britain needs reform.